Okay, I'd first like to ensure that we have silenced our cell phones. Then I'd ask you to please help me welcome Don L. from Seattle, Washington, our speaker tonight.
My new favorite. I'm Don Landis. I'm an alcoholic. Absolutely delighted to be here tonight. I want to get some housekeeping out of the way. I want to thank my good friend Lee for extending the invitation to be with you tonight. I want to thank my beautiful sister Patricia for picking me up at the airport and making a very interesting drive up here. It was lovely. You know, stop looking at the ocean path, the road. We want to focus on the road. But it was a great drive up here. And thanks for all the hospitality, all the people that welcomed me, put their hands out, said welcome to our meeting. That means a lot to me. You get me out of my backyard in AA, so to speak, and I can get a little weird when I'm not around the people I'm normally around. It's funny, you know, I've been sober since September 16th, 1991, and I've always loved AA. I've always felt a part of an AA. But there's always that weird thing when you walk into a room and you don't know everybody. It's like I feel like I'm new again. You know what I mean? Like, there they are. And you talk to a couple of people and you go, yeah, they're messed up just like the ones at home. Okay. And you feel better immediately, you know. My sobriety date is September 16th, 1991. I have a home group. That's the SOS Men's Group. I love my home group. If you have a home group, which I suggest, I hope you love it. I hope it's a place where you draw a line in the sand and make a stand for your life. Because that's where I do it every Monday and Wednesday night with these guys. I go to a lot of other meetings, but those are my home group nights, Monday and Wednesdays. And you know what I love about my home group is everybody's got their hand on the rope. And there's a lot of groups where everybody's got their hand on the rope, but they're pulling in different directions, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of motion, but you're not getting anywhere. And by and large, the guys in my group, we got our hands on the rope, and we're pulling in the same direction. And because of that, we have a plan in place for the new man. When he walks in the door, we know what to do. And that's our only job in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything else, all the other activities, everything we do in the service structure, everything that happens in our home groups supports the only job that we have in AA, which is carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Everything else is an activity that supports that or should be. And there's a lot of stuff that I've learned to leave outside the door when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I show up, I don't know about you, I show up in AA, I got the world hanging on me most nights, you know what I mean? I got my marriage, I got my money, I got my house, I got stuff. I got stuff I'm thinking about. And there's a lot of stuff I got to leave out in the parking lot when I'm with you, if I'm going to be effective, that I remember what this place is, the sanctity of Alcoholics Anonymous, the meeting place. You know, I've been sober over 26 years, man. It's another Saturday night and an undeserved gift of sobriety that I've been living. I'm thrilled with that. But I know there's people in the room tonight that may not be feeling that way about it. And I know when I walk in my home group on a Wednesday night, it may be Wednesday night for me. You know, it's hump day. And I got work the next day and I got projects going. I got stuff on my mind. There could be a young man in that room that might be his last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous if we're not on point. If we're not ready to do for him what was done for me. The simple action of an invitation. The most spiritual thing that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, is the spiritual principle of the invitation. And what do we invite people to? A new way of life. 12 golden steps. No, man. No. We invite them into our lives. We say, hey, man, I know what you're going through. I've been there. You don't have to hurt no more. And I didn't know the way out, but they taught me the way out. And you grab my hand, I'll take you out. You come with me, I got a way out of this thing called alcoholism. And it's right here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they did that for me. And I don't want to ever forget who walked into AA September 16th, 1991. I don't want to forget what that guy was like. I don't want to forget what it was like to be done with drinking. I don't want to do it anymore. It's tearing the cover off of my life. It's ripping the skin from my bones. I wasn't raised this way. I didn't want to turn out this way. And yet that night I'd be drunk, powerless over alcohol, and not knowing which way was up, and not finding any safe direction anywhere I went. So to be with you tonight, to be sitting here with my sister in the front row, my good friend Lee there, man, I'm overpaid. I got no big deals today. But if you would talk to me Thursday, and I wasn't at a podium and I wasn't in touch with the gift at that moment, I might have given you some big deals. That's a funny thing that happens here, you know? Because we get sober on fear and consequence, don't we? I mean, I'd love to think that, oh man, I'm waiting for the guy that got sober on, you know, moral convictions or a good philosophy. You know, one day I realized I was hurting people.
And I just didn't want to hurt anyone anymore, so I came to AA. No, I mean, that's not how we get sober. We get sober on consequence and fear, right? It's a great cocktail, man. I'm going to die and they're after me. That stuff don't last, right? You can't stay sober on consequence and fears, man. The consequence gets cleaned up and the fear goes away. You got to find something here. Something big's going to have to happen to us for us to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and stay sober. And that's what we talk about in AA. We talk about the solution to something big. You know, finding that power greater than ourselves that a lot of us choose to call God, but not everybody. You don't have to. You don't even have to believe in it. God, I remember when I'm new and my sponsors always God talk flying around the room, and I'm offended by the idea of God. Offended. I got stories that will prove to you there's no God, right? And I'm carrying those stories. I'm polishing them up. It's my defense against that. And everybody's got a God. They got an individual God. They got a personal God. They got a God that's getting them parking spots, for God's sakes. They got God that's doing everything for them. God's getting them in relationships, getting them out of relationships. God's doing everything. I don't believe in any of that crap. And I remember telling my sponsor, I don't believe in God. My sponsor didn't blink an eye. He goes, that's okay, kid, he believes in you. How do you argue with that? You get that? I mean, 2,000 years from now, we're still a human race. You know, they're going to be studying the old timers of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, they're the Greek philosophers of our generation, you know. They say stuff to newcomers like me that you can't believe. You looked in the mirror for their lightest problem. I mean, where do you come up with this stuff, you know? I didn't hear any of this before I came to AA. And I want to make one correction. I'm not from Seattle. I know why they said he's from Seattle, you know, and because everybody knows where Seattle is. I'm not from Seattle. You can go to Seattle and then drive 100 miles north. Stop about 20 miles before the Canadian border, and you'll be in Bellingham, Washington. I mean, we're 20 miles from the Canadian border in British Columbia. America's first defense against Canada, I suppose. And it's beautiful, man. I'll tell you, it's 200-foot trees, and it's lakes, and it's the Cascade Mountains, and it's out. You're all invited, man. It's gorgeous. You'll love it out there. And that's where I live, and it's not Seattle. Seattle's L.A. with bad weather, in my opinion. You know, I live in a small town, 80,000 people, you know, and we got good AA, man. Town of 80,000 people, we got 110 meetings a week. Crazy, huh? Yeah, there's a lot of sick alcoholics there, man. It rains a lot, you know what I mean? You know, I think we lead the country in two things, alcoholism and suicide. You know, it's like, you want to get some work done in AA, go to Seattle or go to the Pacific Northwest. We need you, you know what I mean? And this is the time of year everybody's getting really weird in the meetings because of the weather. It's a real phenomenon there. You see it in Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys are out here, you know, oh, it's sunny today. Oh, gosh, sunlight every day, right? You take this for granted. Oh, not where I live. Sun's a big deal, man. I moved there in 2004. I'm from L.A. originally. And when I moved there, I'm listening to the weather, and the forecaster comes on and goes, it'll be overcast with showers and maybe some sun breaks this afternoon. Sun break. I go up to a guy, I go, man, what's a sun break? I go, oh, sun breaks when the sun ain't been out in 2 weeks. And it comes out for like 15 minutes one afternoon, and everybody goes outside and stares at it. I thought he was joking, right? Until I saw it, right? Saw people out there looking at the sun for 15 minutes. Man, we make it through, you know, we make it through fall pretty good. We make it through the first part of winter. The holidays get you through. You hit January 2nd, man, it's a long way till summer, right? So AA gets a little weird this time. People are, you know, you're hiding the cutlery, you know what I mean? People are getting a little bit depressed in there. My men's group, we tried to figure out what to do 5 years ago. We started a men's retreat. We have it the fourth weekend in February. People are like, why would you have a men's retreat in the worst weather? That's exactly why. Because it gives us something to plan. It gives us something to do. It gives us something to look forward to. And we're having a great time with that. And that's what AA does. You know, they read the long form of the fourth tradition tonight. And the principle of the long form is autonomy, right? The way autonomy was taught to me, and I loved it, man. If you're an alcoholic, listen to this because you'll love it too. This is how autonomy was taught to me. An old timer came up to me, he looked around, nobody's around. He goes, we can do anything we want and they can't stop us. As long is we don't hurt any other groups or AA as a whole. And that's the background of autonomy. So if you're bored in your sobriety, don't be bored. Start something. Something you want to do, start it. You know, start an activity. Start a meeting. Start a workshop. Do something. Roll your sleeves up. Get involved because this is AA. This is by us, for us, man. We don't sub anything out. We don't sub anything out. We don't hire anybody to do anything in AA. We do it for ourselves. We create. It's the creative process in AA that keeps our sobriety happening. It's things like this. People that show up and bring food to a potluck and show up on a Saturday night and leave their busy life to what? To come together, right? To make their sobriety more exciting. Because, you know, AA, we're the last house in the block. Do you realize there are no referrals from AA? Like, if you're not making it in AA, we don't go, oh, well, we have a program for guys like you. We'll send you. There's no other program. This is it, man. This is the last house on the block. You don't make it in AA, the next stop's the boneyard. You know what I mean? It's not a big menu. But I'll give you a little background. Definitely not going to spend a lot of time talking about my childhood, my sister here. But I'm going to be brief about this. No, because she knows the truth. You know, I just have what I remember, you know. But, you know, we grew up in Hollywood, California, you know. And Hollywood's an interesting town. If you don't know much about Hollywood, you know, Hollywood's the kind of town that, okay. You know, sometimes you're driving down the road and you look out your window and you see something bizarre. And you go, wow. There's something you don't see every day. You don't say that in Hollywood because you see it every day. You know what I mean? And I have two childhood stories, and most of us that have been in AA for a while do. We have two childhood stories. We got the one that I dragged into Alcoholics Anonymous with me. Now, it's very sad and it's very tragic. And if I tell it just right, hopefully somebody in this room will feel sorry for me. And that was always my intention when I told you that story. And it's a story about my mom's alcoholism, the poverty we grew up in, the dad that got up off the couch when I was 2 years old and said, I'm going out for a pack of smokes, and I haven't seen him since. It's about the gang-riddled neighborhood, never having a man to show me how to live. It's all that stuff, the physical abuse, on and on and on. And then I have the story that I know to be true today. And a funny thing happens to you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you get a sponsor. And I don't know, I know there's nobody here that raised their hand for under 30 days, but if there's anyone that is new and you haven't got a sponsor yet, I want to give you a little bit of free advice. If you're a victim and you want to remain a victim in Alcoholics Anonymous, for God's sakes, whatever you do, do not get a sponsor. Because they seem to delight in destroying victimization. I mean, that seems to be their number one job. And I had a sponsor that took me kicking and screaming through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did what the program talks about. I got down in black and white what really happened. And it was amazing to me the things I conveniently forgot on my way to AA. You know, I had a mom that raised three kids on her own, never took a dime of welfare. Took two buses to work and two buses home to put food on that table. Made sure our homework was done. Made sure we had clothes to wear. We didn't have much, but made sure that we were a family. Took out those horrible household finance loans so we could have a Christmas, so we could have a birthday party when those things came up. A woman that basically sacrificed her entire life for her children. Yet, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was filled with spite and rage and venom for that woman. That's called a lack of perception. And I'm so grateful for the steps, which corrected really the only mistake a loving God ever made with a guy like me. You see, he made my eyes looking outward instead of inward. All my life, I've been able to look at the world and the people in it, and with no effort on my part, tell you what you're doing wrong. That's only part of the gift. I intuitively know what you should be doing instead. And I love to let you know what that is, because I'm a giver. Yeah. And so I did that work in inventory, you know, and I wrote about my childhood. I got all those resentments down. I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and then I wrote and I wrote and I wrote. And you know what I found out about my childhood? It was shocking. It's over. Did not know that when I got here. I want to be clear before I talk about what alcohol did to me. I want to talk about what it did for me. I loved alcohol. I got no grudge against alcohol. Alcohol saved my sanity until I could make it to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the effect produced by alcohol. It says that in the doctor's opinion. Men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. And we all know what that is. But you got to realize that answer you just got in your head, what that effect is produced by alcohol, only 10% of us know what that answer is. 90% of the people on the planet don't have that reaction to alcohol. They're having what's known as a normal reaction to alcohol. We're having an abnormal reaction. I'll tell you a couple of quick stories about that. I went up to a friend of mine years ago, And he's a normal drinker, man. Occasionally has a drink. No big deal. He's definitely not one of us. And I said, what's the effect produced by alcohol when you drink? He thought it was a funny question. He knows I'm sober, so he answered the question. He said, well, you know, Don, sometimes I have a tough day, or maybe it's a celebration, I don't know, and I decide to have a cocktail. And so I drink the cocktail. And it produces a feeling in me, I don't know, it's pleasurable, it's relaxing. If there's music playing, I kind of start hearing the beat, you know what I mean? And it's so enjoyable, I usually order a second drink. And somewhere in the middle of that second drink, I start to feel it. So I stop. No, you don't. No, it's about to get good, man. You hit the accelerator. It's go time, baby. I mean, we all know those guys, man. You're out in the bar, it's 11 o'clock at night, you know, you got about a half a load on, you know, you're starting to feel really good, the music's sounding really good. That waitress you saw when you walked in that you weren't interested in, now she's got potential, you know what I mean? And there's that one guy, man, he gets up from your table, he goes, oh my God, it's after 11 o'clock, I had no idea it was getting so late, I have to work tomorrow, and he goes home. He's not one of us. Alcoholics is a class of people we are willing to ruin tomorrow for the promise of a couple more hours of fun tonight. That's just who we are. Years ago, I got engaged to my beautiful wife, Eileen. She boy meets girl in AA campus. We're married 21 years. She's sober 25 years. And my sister, when she met Eileen, she fell in love with Eileen. She pulled me aside. She goes, you screw this up, I'll kill you. They threw us an engagement party, you know what I mean? Big party at my sister's house, and there's some social drinking going on. You know, what I call white wine drinking, you know? Not really drinking, you know? It's like, there's alcohol, but it's not, you know, come on. No fist fights, no tears, come on. And we're all in the kitchen, my wife-to-be Eileen and myself and my sister, and we're just talking, man. Pat's got a little glass of white wine, no big deal. And at one point, Pat saw some people in the living room she wanted to say hi to, and she put her glass of white wine down, and she walked off into the living room. And Eileen noticed that my sister left her wine in the kitchen. And Eileen's looking at the wine and looking at my sister getting further away and looking at the wine and looking at my sister getting further away. And she turns to me with a little bit of panic in her voice and she goes, Pat left her wine. And I go, yes, she did. She goes, well, should I tell her? I said, baby, she's not one of us. At this particular moment, she's not suffering from separation anxiety, you know? Because we have this bizarre relationship with alcohol, and I love alcohol. I love what alcohol did for me. Alcohol, as much as anything, it transports me to the land of I don't care. You see, I've got all that pre-alcoholic stuff going on long before I drink, man. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm self-obsessed. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. I'm the guy that traps you in a corner, talks about myself for 20 minutes straight, then realize I'm doing that. I snap out of it and go, oh, I'm sorry. That's entirely enough about me. What do you think of me? I mean, I don't mean to be self-obsessed. I can't sleep at night. I have this natural anxiety. Where do I fit in? Do you love me enough? Do I love you? How does this thing work? I have all that alcoholic stew going on. These are not things produced by drinking. These are things that are reduced or magically even disappear with a couple of cocktails. And I don't know that, so I'm a goofy kid growing up. You know, I've got that personality. I don't know that all you've got to do is add alcohol to this kid and all hell's going to break. I don't know that. I mean, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and they gave me the definition of insanity, right? They said, we define insanity as taking the same action expecting different results. And I immediately went, I did that long before I drank. I did that when I was 5 years old. Five-year-old, pre-alcoholic, sitting in the sewing room, goofy kid, playing with a bobby pin. I look to my right, there's an electrical outlet. I remember thinking with my keen pre-alcoholic mind, this looks like it'll fit. Bam! And I got shot across the room, right? My fingers are smoking, my hair standing straight up. And I remember clearly thinking, did that just happen? Did that hurt as bad as I think it did? Bam! Now, based on the way that I lived my life until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I guarantee you, I would have went for three, but I was unconscious. Because we don't just do that with the drink, do we? I mean, I do that with every area of my life. I take the vehicle of my life, and I slam it into a wall, and I drop it in reverse, and I get a running start, and I hit that same wall like there's got to be a hole here somewhere. Pain is not a teacher for me. I want it to be. I'm not a heavy drinker, I'm an alcoholic. It's a funny thing, a heavy drinker given a sufficient reason to quit drinking, he'll quit drinking. It's crazy. Heavy drinker gets told by his wife, you know, this is it, I can't take this anymore. You keep drinking, I'm out of here. Boss calls him on the carpet, goes, man, you got to get your drinking under control. You keep drinking, you're going to have to find another job. Doctor calls him in the office, goes, man, your health is gone. You keep drinking, you're going to be dead within 6 months. Heavy drinker doesn't want to lose his wife, lose his job, lose his health, right? He actually stops drinking. Doesn't have to go to AA, work 12 steps, get a sponsor, be of service, go to potlucks, none of it. Just stops. Now here's where we become confusing to normal people. I have the same emotional reaction to that information as the heavy drinker. You tell me those things, man, I don't want to lose my wife. I don't want to lose my job, and I don't want to lose my health. Difference between me and the heavy drinker is I don't have the power to do anything about it. See, I think I do. And that's called self-knowledge. And the big book tells me on page 39 that for the real alcoholic, he will absolutely be unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. See, I always thought if I had enough trouble, if I understood myself enough, if I understood why I did the things I did, then I could be sober. But you know, I had that. I had that 6 years before I came to AA. There was so much trouble in my life, so many trips to jail, so many lost jobs, so many broken opportunities, broken promises, and skinned knuckles. I had enough. There was enough information in my story. At 25, I should have never drank again, but I drank for another 6 years, knowing I shouldn't do it, knowing it was ripping the cover off my life. And that's the question that we have to ask ourselves when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Why do we keep doing it after it was tearing us up, after we had self-knowledge? Well, it's not mom or dad, the husband, the wife, the employer, the district attorney, the arresting officer, the doctor that's stitching us up. None of those people telling us we have a problem. When it's self-knowledge in our own mind going, the drink is killing me, I need to stop this, and we can't stop. And the question we have to ask is, why is that? It's called alcoholism. See, for the real alcoholic, the difference between me and the heavy drinker is stopping drinking and just stopping and doing nothing else only seems to have the long-term effect of making me so crazy that I'm either going to drink again to produce my sanity and protect it, or I'm going to put a gun in my mouth. You know, we see a lot of suicide in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's rarely drunken. It's almost always sober. When people can't take the pain of sobriety anymore and they don't want to drink anymore. If you can't drink anymore because of what it does to your life, and it tears it up, and it tears up everyone that has the misfortune of loving you, and you can't stand the way you feel when you're sober, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's exactly who the program's designed for. People that have no middle-of-the-road solution. Because I couldn't drink anymore, and I hated the way I felt when I was sober. Silkwood talks about a guy like me. He tells me that I drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. And although I have self-knowledge now, and I admit it's injurious, I know it's killing me, I'll raise my hand and admit that, I can't differentiate the true from the false because the sensation is so elusive. What does that mean? The sensation is so elusive. What does drinking do for me that other things don't? Everything. Everything. It doesn't matter how much money I make, how many women I'm with, how many people tell me I'm the man, how well I do in business, how life goes my way. It doesn't matter. Nothing gets it for me like a couple of drinks. The sensation is that elusive for this alcoholic. But I'll get in trouble and I'll tear my life apart and I can't do it anymore. And I'll gather myself up and I'll go, that's it. And I'll quit drinking. And when I quit drinking, when I make a decision to quit drinking without Alcoholics Anonymous, it's always my decision and I'm happy about it. I love quitting drinking. God, I love it. First couple of days, you're so hopeful. Oh, this is going to be great. You make the alcoholic declaration, I'm not drinking, so don't try to tempt me. And you lie, how you doing? Great, couldn't be doing any better. Ah. Feel better, work better, having a better time. Ah, it's great. And it is, man, and I know it's going to be fine. It's going to be like other things in my life that I've overcome, right? It's going to be like a gym membership. We're going to get in shape. We're not going to drink anymore. Do some push-ups. Go to work early. Go to work 5 days a week. Laundry starts getting done. You know what I mean? And I'm getting so much support, my family and everybody that knows me, man. When I quit drinking, they're like, attaboy, Don, we knew you could do it. We're so proud of you. I'm like, yeah, thanks for hanging in there with me. And it's great for 3 days or 4 days or 17 and a quarter days. And at some point, man, that little voice in my head wakes up and goes, man, why do we think quitting drinking was a good idea? Dr. Silkworth, in the doctor's opinion, describes the biggest understatement in Alcoholics Anonymous, what happens when a guy like me just puts the plug in the jug, when I don't drink no matter what. Dumbest thing we tell new people, we don't drink no matter what. I have a different program. I drink no matter what. I drink through jail, broken relationships, car crashes, death, and insanity. I drink no matter what. We don't drink no matter what. It's the dumbest thing we say to new people. If I could do that, I'd be home doing what? Drinking, no, not drinking no matter what. No, I got to be with you. You know why I got to be with you? Man, I've been in AA for 26 years. I haven't heard anything new in AA in 15 years. You know what I mean? It's all the same stuff, right? Same book. Same message. Why do I go to AA? Why do I keep showing up multiple times every week? Why do I do everything I'm asked to do in AA? Simple reason. I can't carry the message to me. If I could carry the message to me, I'd be home carrying the message to me. I need to be with you so you can carry the message to me, because I can't hear it in my voice. I got to hear it through your experience, strength, and hope. And Silkworth tells me what happens to a guy like me and gives me the biggest understatement. He says, after a short period of sobriety, under my own power, just not drinking, I am rendered irritable, restless, and discontent. That is an understatement. It doesn't sound bad. It sounds clinical. You know what? Can you imagine I show up at a meeting and I see my good friend Lee, and Lee sees me and goes, Donnie, how you doing tonight? Well, Lee, you must know, this particular evening, I am feeling a tad bit irritable, restless, and discontent. And what would Lee say? Oh, no, click your heels and say the third step prayer. You'll be fine, you know? But that's not how it feels, does it? I'm irritable. I want to hurt you. I'm restless. I think I'll go over there. Nope, don't like them. Maybe I'll go over there. No, I don't want to do that. Maybe I'll get some ice cream. God, I'm getting fat. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I'm doing, man. It doesn't matter what I'm doing, who I'm doing it with, where I'm doing it. I'm with the wrong people doing the wrong thing in the wrong place. I'm like a dog circling his own tail looking for just the right place to lay down. Nope, nope, no. And I'm discontent. After a short period of sobriety on my own, I'm discontent. You know, when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you had asked me what kills alcoholics, I would have said with no hesitation, whiskey and car crashes. And today I say discontent. You know, long before I ever leave a magic place called Alcoholics Anonymous and relinquish the gift that I've been given, because nobody can take it from me, my sobriety is mine. It's between me and God. Nobody can touch this gift. I will have to relinquish it. I will have to give it back. And before that happens, I will have to be discontent for a long time. Discontent is that guy that's sitting in the back of the meeting with that vein pumping on his head. And I've been that guy in AA. I've been the guy showing up, man, and I got the world hanging on me, and I don't think there's God, and I'm multiple years sober, and I'm uncomfortable in my own skin. And how you doing tonight, Donnie? Good, good. Any better? I go on a shooting spree. How are you? You know, and I've been that guy in AA. I know what it's like to suffer from untreated alcoholism in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happens to a guy like me when I'm irritable, restless, and discontent? And I want to say this about discontent. I'm not talking about happy and unhappy. Right? Happy and unhappy, that seems to be influenced by things outside of me. You know, how's the money going? What kind of mood my wife's in? How's work going? What's the weather like? I can live with happy and unhappy, all right? That's just life. That's no big. But discontent is much more powerful. You know what alcoholics like? You know what we really like? We like it when things are wrong. We like it when there's something we can point at and go, that's why I'm unhappy. You know, lose a job, bad medical diagnosis, somebody passes away that you love, money's tough. You know, we're crazy, but we can point at something and go, that's it. You know what makes us nuts? You know what makes us crazy? When there's nothing wrong, but we feel like something's wrong. When you lay in bed at night and you're doing that alcoholic math in your head and you go, I don't know. My wife loves me. I got a good job. My bills are paid. I live in a nice house. I've been sober a while. I don't know. It's pretty good. I think I'll kill myself tomorrow. And you just don't. There's nothing wrong, but we feel like there's something wrong. That's discontent. Here's another way to describe discontent. In a sober state, I have a complete and utter inability to experience joy. When you're doing things and you go, I should be happy. I shouldn't have any problems. I mean, look where I came from. Why am I unhappy? I don't understand it. I was sure if all these things came to pass in my life, I'd never have another bad day. Yet I'm having a bad day. And what Silkworth promises me is if I stay irritable, restless, and discontent, suffering from untreated alcoholism long enough, I will succumb to the desire to drink again. I will go on a spree. I will burn my life to the ground one more time. And if I'm lucky, I'll emerge from that. How? Remorseful. God. I said I wouldn't do it again. Didn't want to do it again. I didn't mean to do it again. I didn't even see it coming. I did it again. With a firm resolve not to drink again. It's going to be different this time. This time I'm going to get a sponsor. This time I'm going to do what they tell me to do. This time. And it tells me unless there's divine intervention, this is going to be repeated over and over and over again. Unless something big happens in my life, something very big happens in my life, I am doomed to repeat the desperate experiment of the first drink over and over again because I don't have the power to stay away from that drink. And that's the first step. The first step, you want to know what the short form of the first step is? I'll give it to you. We are screwed. There's no hope in the first step. What the first step tells me is I'm promised that if something doesn't happen in my life, it's not a question of if I'm going to drink again, it's when I'm going to drink again. I did everything I could think of to keep from coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I pulled the geographics. I changed girlfriends, I changed jobs, I changed locations, I changed everything I could think of except giving up my drinking. I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous September 16th, 1991, more dead than alive. I was holed up at my sister's house, the last relative on the planet that had anything to do for me. And they were done with me, man. And God, my last weekend before I came to AA, I'm sitting there drinking whiskey and I'm hanging out in this crack house with these crackheads and I don't smoke crack. They're like, you want some, man? I said, no, man, I'm good. I'm just drinking I was lonely and they were up, you know what I mean? You know, I'd stolen my sister's car one more time and I disappeared for 3 days in a row with no phone call one more time. I walked into a house that had been devastated by the disease of alcoholism. They wanted me gone and I played the AA card. I wasn't going to get sober. Come on. I got 6 years of experience that tells me it doesn't matter how bad I want to be sober. I'm not going to get sober. I know one thing over everything in the world. I'm going to get drunk again. I just don't know when. But I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to be homeless. So I begged for another chance. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous with the worst motives in the world. And that's the wonderful thing about AA. AA doesn't work because of us. It doesn't work because of our sincerity. It doesn't work because of our honesty. I love that. We have to be rigorously honest. Who's rigorously honest when we get here? Oh my God, when I was new, if I went to lunch at McDonald's, he'd go, where'd you go to lunch? I'd go, Carl's Jr. And I wouldn't even know why I said it. If I got to be rigorously honest when I'm new, I'm dead. I'm screwed. I don't know anything. I'm a million miles away from honest. AA doesn't work because of me. It works in spite of me. Yes. I don't even remember my first night in AA. You know what I mean? I'm detoxing my brains out. Second night in AA, I remember. Oh, baby. Because it was the most important night of my life. Most important thing happened to me that night that's happened in over 26 years. And it happened my second night in AA. Because I didn't look that night the way I look tonight. You know what I mean? I got hair down my back and it's dirty. I don't shower anymore. I don't shave anymore. I don't have the ability to speak the King's English because I'm torn up upstairs. You know, I communicate in a series of hand gestures, grunts, and clicks. You know what I mean? And my second night in AA, I attended the 6 o'clock meeting at the Simi Valley Alano Club. Hour and a half meeting, but there's a break from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, and I'm waiting for the 8 o'clock meeting to start. And I got my back against the wall, man, and I got my arms folded across my chest, and I'm rocking back and forth, not because I'm a tough guy, because I'm trying not to explode from the inside out, because I'm coming up on 48 hours without a drink of alcohol, and I'm physically addicted to alcohol. I'm wearing my sunglasses at night. I got my tough guy radar out, and I'm just daring you to come talk to me. And the good men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous that night in the Simi Valley Alano Club are giving me a wide berth. And they are wise to stay away from me because I am dangerous. Because I'm terrified. And anybody terrified is dangerous. And I'm looking at them and the very same head that I have to get around the planet with today was there that night and it started talking to me. And said, look at them, Don, look at them. They're happy, they're clean, they all know each other. They're not talking to you, they don't want you here. Why do you do this to us, Don? Why do you do this? You know what, you're quitting drinking again? How many times does that make, Don? 100, 150? How many times you quit drinking? Oh, now you're in AA, it's going to be different. You know what you do, Don? This is what you do. You make the big talk, you quit drinking, and then what? Within a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, what do? You get drunk. You put us through all that pain, and then you drink anyway. I got an idea for you, Slick. Why don't we go get a drink? Why don't we blow this pop stand with these squares and go get a drink? Because you don't belong in here either. And you're going to drink anyway, so let's get it done today. Let's get out of here. Let's get a drink. Let's get a drink. Let's get a drink. And I'm leaving Alcoholics Anonymous on my second night of recovery. Because I can't take the pain of sobriety. And I'm powerless over alcohol. And I can't be with you one more second. And I caught a break. Because over in the corner were two card-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous named Lou and Mark. And the way Lou and Mark tell the story is they saw me. And Lou looked at Mark and went, whoa. And Mark looked at Lou and went, yeah. And Lou said, I bet we can't get him sober. And Mark said, well, we're here anyway. And it's the most important moment of my life. Whether I live or die is going to be decided in the next few minutes. Yet for Mark and Lou, it was Tuesday. And Mark and Lou were where they were every Tuesday, hanging out between the 6 o'clock and the 8 o'clock meeting at the Simi Valley Alano Club, chewing the fat, drinking coffee with their eyes trained on the room and their eyes trained on the door, and they were looking for men to 12-step because they had their primary purpose in place that night. And they did to me what I think is the most important action we take in Alcoholics Anonymous, way more important than who's speaking at a podium or what we had to eat or any of the other stuff that goes to create a good mechanism in Alcoholics Anonymous where recovery can occur. And what they did, I think, is more important than anything. Two card-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous took a 30-foot journey across an AA clubhouse to cordially welcome a man to Alcoholics Anonymous who was dying from the disease of alcoholism. Hi, my name is Lou. This is Mark. We don't think we've met you. Why don't you come sit with us? You know, it sounds like such a politeness, such a nicety. Why do I think it's so important? You expect me to go walk to Mark and Lou 30 feet for them? I can't do it. It's a million miles. Don't you know where I've been, who I've hurt, what I've done? Don't you understand I can't get my eyes off of my shoes and you expect me to go shake hands? No, they understood that they would have to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And Mark sat down with me and Lou brought me a half a cup of coffee and Lou clapped me on the back. He said, Don, this is Mark. He'll be your sponsor. And then he walked away. And they assigned me my first sponsor in AA. And I know that's not done everywhere, but a good idea in my case, because we say things to new people because they said it to us. We're saying it to the new guy, right? We don't even think about it. You know, every meeting I go to, there's something in the format about sponsorship. You know, we encourage sponsorship. We stress sponsorship. And what do we love to say to new people? Find somebody that has what you want. Huh. I wonder what I want my second night in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, I don't know. Maybe a pharmaceutical rep with a spare Cadillac? Because I'd have never picked the weenie boy they assigned to me. You know what I mean? Because he's everything I'm not, man. He's clean cut, soft spoken, wire rimmed glasses, bald head. And man, he's got something that for AA and God that I don't have for anything in the universe. He's reverent. The reverence for AA and God's just coming off him. And that stuff people say, oh, I don't talk to the newcomer about God till they get their feet underneath him. He didn't get that memo. My first conversation with this guy, he's talking about what God did for him, what God did for them, what God did for her, what God is going to do for me, and he's expecting a miracle. And it wasn't what he said, it was how he said it. Everything about him was a guy that wasn't trying to sell me anything. He just had a sincere desire to be helpful. And he was so excited to see me. He was so excited for me. He was telling me crazy stuff. It's my second night of recovery. I'm ready to leave Alcoholics Anonymous and go drink. And he tells me we're the lucky ones. Oh my God, Don, we're in here. You made it to AA, kids. You made it. The war's over. We lost. It's okay. They're out there in the streets and they're dying, but we're in here safe and sane and we're together. We'll be okay. You just got to keep coming back. And he got a meeting directory out without my permission, I might add. He started circling the meetings I'd be attending in Alcoholics Anonymous. How do I know that? He said, well, these are the meetings you'll be attending in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember thinking, that's an awful lot of circling. And then he asked me, he goes, are you working? I said, oh, no, I'm currently unemployed. More circling, more circling, more. got me a big book of 12 and 12, handed me the meeting directory, and then he insulted me. You believe that? Just met the guy. Because you're going to sponsor new people, you got to get off on the right foot. Try to insult them as soon as possible. Because well, it's impossible not to insult new people. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, how you doing tonight? Well, it's kind of a personal question, don't you think? It's so damn sensitive when we get here, you know? And he goes, do you think you can go home tonight and not drink? That's just rude, isn't it? I mean, it's my second day of recovery, for God's sakes. It kind of offended me, and I snapped at him. I said, listen, fella, any idiot can go a day without drinking. And he lit up like Christmas. He said, oh, you're going to be perfect for our program. I got in my sister's car that night with all these books, and she looked at it and went, oh, my God. I go, I know. I think I got homework. And it began. My journey in Alcoholics Anonymous began, three sides of the triangle. Because what my sponsor, I want to tell you something. My sponsor didn't teach me anything the way they teach in school. He taught me everything I know the way we teach in AA. And the way we teach in AA is by example and by invitation. He didn't tell me it was a good idea to do setup. He said, you know what, kid? Can you show up a little bit early tomorrow night? I got to set up the meeting. I could really use your help. Oh, my God, my sponsor needs my help. Well, anything for you, sponsor. I'd show up early and help him. He'd say, hey, man, you know, he didn't say, you know what, you should get on this committee. It'd be good for you. He'd say, you know what, we got this committee. We're having this event come up. We'd really like your input. We think you'd really bring a lot to the game. And I'd think, wow, I got here just in the nick of time for AA, didn't I? You see, he left me some dignity. He left me some dignity. He left me some self-respect, man. He invited me into his AA life. He invited me into his car. He invited me into his commitments. He invited me into his relationship with God. And he taught by example. Because in AA, man, it's monkey see, monkey do. Monkey see, monkey do. But let me tell you something. You better pick the right monkeys. A lot of monkeys around here don't make it. And I picked those guys that were telling me AA was the best thing that ever happened to them. It told me it didn't take much of a man to make it in AA, but it took all of that man. He said, God and you will know if you're applying yourself. He goes, some days you'll have more than other days. Whatever you got that day, you bring to AA. And some days I've had very little, but I brought it to AA. And some days I've had more, and I brought that also. But I've always tried to be honest about what I have to bring to the game. And I haven't negotiated my recovery. You know, it's funny. I'm in sales for a living, and that's what I do for a living. I negotiate. I overcome objections. I educate. So you can make an informed decision on whether you want to buy the product that I have. And I negotiate. That's what I do. And I'm good at it. I don't negotiate my recovery. I negotiate what I eat. I negotiate where I live. I negotiate who I sleep with. I negotiate every area of my life. Everything in my life is up for negotiation. Everything. Where I vacation, how much golf, all up for negotiation. I don't negotiate my recovery. I have no opinion about my job in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't negotiate it. You know what negotiation sounds like? This is what it sounds like. Do I want to go to the meeting tonight? Yeah, I should probably get a commitment. But do I want to get a commitment? If I do that, then I won't have that evening free. You know, they asked me to come and chair that meeting, but, you know, I don't really think I really want to be that involved with that meeting. You know, the devil lives in the negotiation. The devil's going to be the one that's going to get me to negotiate my sobriety. He's going to drive a wedge between me and you. You see, I can't get drunk when I'm with you. I can't get drunk when I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't get too crazy. I can't bring you a problem that you don't have a solution that's based on experience, strength, and hope. But if the devil, through negotiation, gets me away from you, if I'm cut off from you, and I'm alone with the very same head that you see right now for long enough, I'll start negotiating my way right out here. And I'll say to myself, for God's sakes, I'm 26 years sober. I've been going to meetings the whole time. I sponsored a lot of people. I've done a lot of stuff in alcohol. You know, let somebody else do it for once. Why has it always got to be me? You know what? I deserve a little break. I don't need to go to all those meetings. I don't need to sponsor all those guys. I don't need all that stuff. And then I'll be new, and then Lee will sponsor me, and I'll new, and he'll never let me forget it. So it ain't happening, Lee. I'm not getting drunk. God, that just made my hair stand up. That's true, man. I was a year sober, man. My sponsor didn't say congratulations. He said, you can never get drunk. And I said, well, I don't plan to. He goes, because you've talked more smack in a year about sobriety than most people do in 10 years. And if you get drunk, they'll eat the meat off your bones. And you know what's funny, man? When I was new, people would give me a little bit of crap because I was so enthusiastic about AA. You know, I'd quote the book in meetings. And guys, some of the guys would go, well, you can teach a parrot to talk. But then the old-timers, other old-timers would pull me aside and they'd go, don't listen to that guy, man. That book is magic. You learn that book. You keep quoting that, man. We'd rather hear that means than somebody's group therapy share. It goes, good for you. And so I went where it was warm, man. I went with the guys that were encouraging. You know what I mean? The guys that were telling me to put this thing first in my life. And I found out AA is not group therapy. It's not group therapy. It's not shock therapy. It's not primal therapy. It is a therapy. I'll tell you the difference between AA and therapy. Listen, you can go to therapy. I did some marriage counseling. I got a lot out of it. Really liked it, you know? It was great. We'd share, be really open and honest. My wife would cry. She seemed to enjoy it. It was good. But in therapy, you'll sit down and you'll talk to a therapist about what you do when you do it. And they'll ask you some questions and they'll dial it in and you'll talk about it. And you'll discover why you do what you do when you do it. So the next time you do what you do when you do it, you'll know why you're doing it. In AA, we have a completely different program. It's very simple. We call it knock it off. Knock it off, man. I mean, I go to my sponsor with bad behavior and I tell him what I'm doing. He doesn't go, well, let's talk about your childhood for a minute. Well, let's talk about how that made you feel, Don. He would just go, what are you, sober or not? Do you have a God in your life or not? Knock it off. Stop it. You're making us look bad. I love that, man. I love AA. I love the bar. I love the fact that these guys grew me up, man. My sister loved my first sponsor because he was mean to me, right? That was my perception. I thought he yelled at me all the time, was mean to me. He was never mean to me, and he never yelled at me. You know what he did? He kept telling me the truth. And when nobody has had the guts to tell you the truth your whole life, because I'm big and I'm a bully, and this guy saw through that bluster, right? And you hear the truth for the first time in years, it sounds like anger and it sounds like yelling. And I'd come home, man, and I would tell my sister the horrible things my sponsor, and my sister loved it. She loved the fact my sponsor was mean to me. She goes, oh, really? He said that? Oh, what else did he say? Oh, he called you a little boy in a grown man's body? That's great. Years ago, I was giving a talk, man, and this guy had waited in line to thank me to talk. You know, it's my favorite kind of newcomer, you know. It's like the guy you see for 20 feet because he's angry. He's angry. And you're thinking like, yeah, this guy wants to take a poke at me, you know. He's just angry. He's angry to be sober. He's angry to be in AA. He's angry that he's got to thank the speaker. You know, his sponsor's making him do it. So he gets up and I shake his hand. He goes, hey, speaker boy, let me ask you something. He goes, this AA thing, how long does it take? Because I got to tell you, it's taken forever. And I gave the guy an answer from the book. I talked about what happens between the ninth and the tenth step, and I did a disservice to this guy. Because that's not what we do. We don't give... This is not academic. This is not a curriculum. This is not of the head, this is of the heart. This is not of the mind, this is of the spirit. We share our experience, strength, and hope. And if I had to answer that question today, I would tell him 30 days. It takes 30 days for AA to work. But that's how long it took AA to show me how powerful it was. You know, my sister's a professional. She works long, hard hours. And I was going to AA every night, two meetings a night. And the second meeting would end at 9:30, and then we'd clean up, and it'd be 10 o'clock at night. And you know what it's like to be new in AA. You're ready to go home. You're really tired. And then somebody goes, hey, you want to go out for coffee? And you go, coffee? Yeah, coffee sounds good. I'd like to have another cup of coffee. I've only had 15 cups tonight. Another cup of coffee sounds good. A double espresso would hit the spot right now, right now, right now, right now. So we go out for coffee, man. And now I'm getting home. It's midnight, right? I'm so self-obsessed. I don't understand. I don't realize my sister's still up. I don't think to myself why she's still up. She's got to get up early in the morning. I'm not working, man. I'm just going to AA. Man. I'm an AA bum. You know, I go to a lot of meetings and try to sound spiritual. I love it, you know. But I don't even notice it. But she'd stay up, and what she wanted to know is how I was doing in AA. What was going on there? How's your experience? How's your sponsor doing? She's checking on her brother because she loved me. And I'd tell her about AA in Southern California. And I'd tell her, yeah, you know, I make it to 30 days. You're going to give me a little colored hunk of aluminum. They call it a chip. And they do that at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, and 9 months. And if you're lucky enough to stay sober a year, they'll bake you a cake. They'll put a candle in it. They'll sing happy birthday to you. It's the dumbest thing you've ever seen until it happens to you. Then it's kind of cool. And so I told her about this stuff in AA, man. I remember I got 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I walked into my regular meeting that night, and they were all grinning at me, you know? Everybody in the meeting's grinning at me. And I realized they're counting days with me. I looked around the room, and I realized that 30 days earlier, I didn't know any of these people. Now I knew all their names. A lot of them have given me rides. I've been in a lot of their homes. And, you know, I started feeling that ice crack a little bit in my chest. And they asked for anybody with 30 days, man, and I stood up and everybody applauded. They all went nuts. And I went up and I got that colored hunk of aluminum and I held it between my thumb and my forefinger, you know, and I sat down and I put my hand in my pocket and I couldn't let go of it. And let me tell you something. I've been some places and I've accomplished some things in my life. And I didn't have a rational explanation why this colored hunk of aluminum between my thumb and forefinger in my front pocket meant more to me than all of it. I started getting choked up and I felt the tears welling up in my eye, but I couldn't let you see it, man. I fought those tears back because I don't want you to see how much this means to me. Because I'm afraid to hope. Man, I'm afraid to hope that I finally found something that maybe is an answer for me. And I come home later that night, my sponsor drops me off and he says that spiritual thing, yeah, good job, kid, do it again. And I walk into a home that 30 days earlier had been devastated by the disease of alcoholism. And I walk in and I close the door behind me and around the corner comes out my sister and she's got a cupcake and there's a candle in it and the candle's lit. And my sister starts singing happy birthday to me. And she finishes the song and I blow out the candle and she looks me in the eye and she goes, I know you don't get a real cake till you're a year sober, my brother, but for you, 30 days is like a year. And we had a nice moment, you know, and I even missed the spiritual significance against that, and I didn't think about it till years later. You know, this is a woman that had never been to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had never read any Al-Anon literature, any AA literature. You know, a woman that had been severely affected by the disease of alcoholism through nothing more than her standing in close proximity to somebody that she loved for too long. And yet, without her permission, the loving God that runs AA had somehow attached himself to me. And I'm going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous every night, and I'm going into a home that's been devastated. And it wasn't words on the book, and it wasn't things that people were saying in meetings. It was something in my eyes and something in my deportment. There's a part in the book that I love that says, when a new man or woman comes to AA, there's something about the joint, something about the electricity in the place, the light in the eyes of the people to let the sufferer know that maybe they found haven at last. And I'm here to tell you, when we come to AA, and we go to our respective homes, occupations, and affairs, that loving God comes with us. And he gives our family and our coworkers and our employers and now people out there in the world, it may give, gives them hope that maybe they found safe haven at last. And I've stayed sober all this time. I've had no time off in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've sponsored men since I was 6 months sober, and I continue to do that day. The joy of my life. Love sponsoring people. I'll tell you the only story I'll tell you that you need to know about sponsorship, why I do it. I'm 10 years sober, and I got a bad medical diagnosis, man, and I was very sick for a year. They put me on a lot of different Western medicine, and none of it worked. And then they put me on experimental medication. They said, this is either going to work or you're going to have a bad reaction. I had the bad reaction. I made it through 20 minutes of work and I had to go home. And I went from being so cold I was wearing a parka to so hot sweat was flying off of my body. And I'm curled up in the fetal position and my joints hurt so bad. My hands are like claws and I'm feeling sorry for myself. The self-pity's dripping down the walls. This shouldn't happen to me. I'm sober too long. Look at what I've done in AA. Why is God doing this to me? And my phone rang. It's the guy I sponsor. And I remember thinking, not now, damn it. But I got good training in Alcoholics Anonymous. I answer the phone. I go, what's up, buddy? He goes, not much, sponsor. How you feeling? Because they all know I'm sick. And usually I lie. I say, well, with God's help in AA, I'll be okay. But for whatever reason, I told the truth that day. And I told him exactly what was going on. You want to know what I'm doing? Let me tell you. I'm in the worst pain I've ever been in, man. I think the God's deserted me, and I feel so sorry for myself. I can't stand my own company. And that's punctuated by running dashes to the bathroom where I don't know what's going to happen in there. And I'm scared because I think I'm going to die, and I don't want to die. You want to know how I'm doing? That's how I'm doing. Dead quiet on the other end of the phone. A few seconds go by, and he goes, wow, Sponce, I'm so sorry to hear that. Listen, I met this girl. And that's why we sponsor people. Because they just don't care. My very life depends on reducing my self-centeredness. Sponsor newcomers, don't reduce your self-centeredness. They will insinuate themselves into your life and they will take all that time you used to spend thinking about yourself and they'll gobble it up. And it's the greatest gift I have in my life. You know? I know I'm doing really well when somebody goes, how you doing, man? And I don't have an answer because I haven't thought about it. I go, well, hang on, let me get back. Let me think. Yeah, I think I'm doing okay. Been kind of busy. Been busy in AA, busy work, busy doing God's work. Man, that's a good way for me to be. Like when I have time, I'll tell you to this day, if I want to screw up my day, all I got to do is schedule about 15 minutes. on the couch, I'm going to have a good think. You know what I mean? I'm going to think about some stuff. I'm going to think about my marriage, my job, where I live, politics, you. Right? Man, I get done with that, I'm ready to kill myself. I mean, my head is not my friend, nor do I ever think it will be. I mean, my thoughts are for amusement only. I'd love to tell you, because of God and the steps, that I'm really well wrapped. I'm not. I just go out there and like do a great impersonation of an adult, and I'm doing really well out in the world. It's funny, man. People invite me in their home. I'm of service. I just go, gee. You know, it's a lot of fun. I'm going to tell you a quick story about AA, and I'm going to sit down. In 2004, my wife and I left Los Angeles. We moved to the Pacific Northwest because my wife wanted to live someplace beautiful. I thought it was really ridiculous, but that's what she wanted to do. And so we left the city, and we're city kids, right? We're concrete, steel, and glass. And suddenly, we're 8 miles out of town, and we're in the woods. You know what I mean? I mean, it's dark at night. I mean, it's darkity dark, dark. I remember the first time I forgot something out in my car. And I went out there and I didn't have the porch light on and I didn't have a flashlight. I got halfway to my car and a little voice in my head said, "Cougar." And I just jumped up in the air, ran in the house, slammed the door. My wife Eileen's like, "Oh, what's with you?" And I'm like, "Don't go out there. Darkity dark, dark." And we got wildlife where we live. We got bear, we got cougar, we got tons of deer, man. And the first summer we're there, the mama deer start showing up. They're spotted fawns and we lost our minds. Because we're city kids. We got baby deer in our backyard. If you need 20,000 photographs of a baby deer, I got them. And so we fell in love with these deer, man. And it's one little boy deer, man. I just fell in love with him because he had a big scar across his face, right? So I make up a story in my head like he got it defending his mom's honor. And we're city kids, so we name him. That's Mama Deer and Scratch. Mama Deer and Scratch, right? And then rutting season comes in the fall, and the deer start taking off their summer coats and putting on their winter coats, but not Scratch. For lack of a better term, he started to look ugly. You know what I mean? He starts losing all his fur in big patches. And I mentioned it to my wife, like, Scratch is looking rough. And my wife goes, "Yeah, he is." And my wife is like that girl, man. And she got on the internet and researched it and reported back to me. It's an actual deer affliction that they get in their first year called deer hair loss syndrome. And if they get it bad enough and lose enough of their fur, winter comes. They can't eat enough to keep their furnace going. They'll get hypothermic and they'll die. I go, "Scratch is going to die?" She goes, "Yeah." I go, "Not on our watch." And we started breaking every wildlife management law in the state of Washington, man. And my wife is setting up feeding stations in our backyard. And when you're trying to feed the one sick deer, you can't feed the one sick deer. So we got 30 deer coming from everywhere. My wife's in the backyard yelling at 150-pound bucks, "You're selfish, you're self-centered, let the sick one eat." She's chasing them out of the yard. Not me, I'm on the deck going, "Be careful, honey." And it's not working. It's not working, man. And Scratch is losing more and more fur, and I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with this baby deer. And I go to work, and I call my wife. I go, "You see Scratch today?" She goes, "Yeah, he came by." I go, "How's he look?" She goes, "Not good." And I shake my fist at God. "Not this one, God. You don't get this one." And nothing's working, man. We're feeding him. We're feeding him. Pretty soon, he's lost all the fur in his body, except a 2-inch wide, 3-inch high swatch of fur from the nape of his neck all the way down to his rump. So now he's just fat, rounded out like a beer keg, baby deer, mohawk, newcomer, sick, dying in my backyard, just pooping and eating all day. And I'm obsessed with this baby deer. And we make it through the winter and spring comes, and Scratch doesn't die. And for the next 3 or 4 years, every rutting season, he would come down from the high country with the other boys, and he'd be this magnificent buck with this huge rack. He'd show up in my backyard, and we knew it was him because of the scar. He'd walk right up to my wife. My wife would feed him apples by hand. And I'd watch that thing, and I'd go, "What was it about that baby deer that made me lose my mind?" And then one day it hit me. I'm that baby deer. I'm that guy sitting in the Simi Valley Alano Club that's got to leave AA. I'm the guy with anyone with a glancing familiarity with alcoholism would have taken one look at and said, that guy over there, he's going to die. And 2 car-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous saw the same thing and said, "Not on our watch." And they did what we do, and they gave me what we give newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to tell you something, as much as I'm sure I'm standing here right now, it's our watch now. And interestingly enough, they're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're coming looking for us. And they're going to show up the same way we did, knowing this thing's not going to work, not sure how it happens. How do you do this? How do you stay sober? How do you not drink and not miss it? How do you do that? And we have the answers. But the question we have to ask ourselves when these new friends show up in Alcoholics Anonymous, Where will we be? And more importantly, how will we be? I mean, am I going to be in the corner with my buddies cutting up, talking about fantasy football, my latest business deal, going on a hunting trip? Or am I going to be like Mark and Lou? Am I going to leave all that crap in the parking lot where it belongs, where it doesn't belong to ever cross the spiritual threshold of Alcoholics Anonymous? Am I going to leave it out there so I'm ready, on point, to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers? Because life, the game we play here is you bet your life, and we only have one job. We're in the saving lives business. But I'm honest with you. I show up in AA, and I got the world hanging on me. I'm thinking about work. I'm thinking about my wife. I'm thinking about my money. I'm thinking about my problems. I'm thinking about that, and I'm not ready to go to AA. And I got a simple solution, man. I don't get out of the rig until I pray. I shut down the rig in the parking lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, any meeting I'm at. Before I get out, I say a prayer. I say, God, I got the world hanging all over me, and it seems like big stuff to me. Please take this away. I'm going to leave this in the front seat with you, and I know you'll take care of it, and it'll all be waiting for me when I come back. Give me eyes that can see. Give me a heart that can feel. Let me be there for the new man. Let me remember the blessed gift of sobriety and try to pass on what's been freely given to me. Thank you, God. Thank you for this undeserved gift. It takes about 15 seconds. I shut down the rig. Now I'm ready to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I've left my worldly concerns outside where they belong. Now I can do for somebody else what Mark and Lou did for me. Because they're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. They're coming looking for us. And I hope we're ready when we get here. And I hope we stay sober forever. Thanks for listening.